Hey everybody, thank you so much for listening. Real quick up top, just wanted to thank all of our lovely, adorable Patreon members. Thank you for giving a couple bucks a month to support the show. We really appreciate it. If you ever thought about being a Patreon member, it's super easy. You just go up on the website, twomagiciansonemic.com, and give us a dollar or two a month. It helps support the show. We really appreciate it. Once again, thanks for listening, and enjoy this episode with Justin Willman.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
This is the Two Magicians, One Mic with Justin Willman. Well, you are kind of my, usually I have Simon, but he's in like magic puzzle land. I don't know if you heard about this, but...
I heard it. It's going too well.
Too well. And now he's like, I need to just work on this for a bit. So I understand. How are you, man? You good?
Yeah, I'm good. The last time we did a pod, there was no Simon either.
It's true.
I'm beginning to think that Simon doesn't want to talk to me.
No, that was PS. That was, no, BS. That was before Simon. That's what we call it on the show. That was before he was the co-host.
Oh, that's right. That was your old Florida buddy.
That was kind of like, right? A weird in between where that was me like my first year in LA and me forcing myself into magicians' homes, and luckily you let me into your house, so that was
good. It worked,
so it was wonderful. How's the family? How's the kid? How's your lovely wife?
Let's see, family as a whole is good. My lovely wife is good. We're both tired. We wake up really sore and feeling old every day because we're picking up this kid, and it's like, it's only 25 pounds, but I don't know what we're doing wrong. We hurt. He's doing great. He's happy.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any friends to miss.
You're in a good spot, I would think. Yeah. I can imagine kids who are just a little bit older or just probably can't comprehend why they can't go see their friends. That's got to be sad.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm hanging in. The novelty of all this is kind of worn off a bit.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. I mean, because I listened to your interview on Taylor's podcast about a month or two ago, and you said, I remember you saying, I don't miss live shows. And I was so happy to hear you say that, because I was at that point too, where I'm like, oh, I needed this break. But now I really miss live shows, and it's a weird spot to be in. Are you there too?
Yeah, I'm there too. Yeah, I miss it. I don't even know if I was at my office space the other day, just kind of organizing things. And I'm like, I don't even remember how I used to pack all this stuff. I don't remember my set list. I don't like when I do get on stage again, I don't, it'll be like I'm watching the show for the first time again. I do miss it. I don't know what it is. I miss feeling, I don't know. There's like a relevancy that you miss, right? Mm-hmm. I miss feeling, like in a live show, it's such an immediate relevancy. Like they need you, you need them. You're trading energy. Mm-hmm. I miss it. It's weird.
That's the biggest thing with these virtual shows. We were talking about that before we started. Like you're just constantly giving out energy. And I've had to really pace myself and learn how to manage my energy differently and do stuff that's less exhausting, because by the end of like a 30-minute or 45-minute set, you feel like you've just done a marathon and you're just literally standing in your home office. It's insane.
Yeah, it takes a lot out of you. And it's a totally different beast, obviously, just because the big stuff probably doesn't really even play as well as an intimate connection. But I think you do feel like you're having to give, probably if you see 30 different tiles on the screen, all these thumbnails, you have to kind of like give it to all these people. And we need to pace ourselves for those performances. Yeah.
I know like a lot of comedians will leave like people unmuted, and I mute everybody and I don't allow them to unmute themselves just for, in case there's security purposes. But it's also, it's weird because then you're just like, and joke, hold for applause, hold for, and you're just hearing it in your head.
You see them kind of like laughing quietly.
I try to get everybody to do deaf applause because I took sign language for 2 semesters. And to me, I'm like, this is normal. This is okay for me. But anyway, aside from depressing Zoom shows, congrats on season 3. We were in the top 10 on the Netflix for like a week, which is very, I think, difficult to do. That's pretty cool.
That was very cool. And I think we were the number one unscripted show for a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. So like for the whole month of May, I think for the whole month since from launch, we were at least in the top 10 of unscripted shows the whole time, which feels really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very surreal. The quarantine, I think, created an audience that really needed some escapism,
sure,
some feel good stuff that they could watch with their whole family. Cause there's not a lot of shows like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what I think. Maybe it was even by accident with season one, but, it's just so it's important to do kind of cultural things and political things to, you know, put that out there so people can have that conversation. But I think that is what's so nice about what everybody has been working on in Humans is it is a nice refreshing change of pace, because every show you watch, you know, for a positive effect is trying to say something. But I think with Humans, we're just like, we're having fun. This is crazy. Was that intentional?
And I think that is saying something, except for some reason. It's like, I think season one, like, we struck upon something that I will, you know, I'll admit wasn't like necessarily by design, you know, to be a show that celebrates humanity and celebrates the things that we all have in common, as opposed to focusing on what we have that's different. And then, you know, like, I think we really in season two and three made a point to showcase diversity and to have representation of different types of people and ages and demographics without drawing attention to it at all, and mm-hmm. just treating people the same. And it's so, which you wouldn't think is like revolutionary or notable, but for some reason, like, that is in these times somehow a very notable thing, just to see people who are all of different lifestyles treated the same. It sends like a subliminal, I think, message. So that's, if anything, that's kind of like this topical message that we're all in this together, which I think we need to be reminded of a lot lately.
Yeah. Like, I heard Dan Levy of Schitt's Creek talking about, you know, we just created a world where there was no homophobia. And I didn't even realize that until it's mentioned. And I feel like you guys and the writers are doing an amazing job of that with Humans, of just like, no, this is the world for everybody. And it's, you know, we're trying to paint this kind of wonderful, beautiful picture. And I think it's coming out very well. It's, you know, it's been a thrill to be a part of. It was incredibly exhausting. And I can imagine it was 1,000 times more exhausting for you last year, because you were nice enough to let me, you know, open for you and tour manage for you for a couple of weekends when Chelko couldn't do it. And we got back at like, how many times? At 6 a.m. or 7 a.m. And you're like, okay, I'm going to the office now. I'm like, okay, I'm going to my couch to sleep.
I know. It was a glutton for punishment. I mean, I wouldn't do it any differently. I love going on tour every weekend, because I feel like what it kind of does is it keeps you from getting, like, when you're busy working on a show, this project, and you're kind of like, you know, you're in your bunker, and you're not really, like, it's easy to maybe somehow forget about who you're doing it for. Like, you're making the show for the people, you know. It's easy to remember to think like, okay, I'm doing this show to impress, you know, make the writers laugh, or kind of really create good magic for the magic team. But it's really like, it's about the people. So every weekend to be interfacing with the people who are going to be watching this, I think kept me in a good headspace, which was important, because, and also I think kept me energized for some reason, like, kind of, you know, even though every, you know, there was every reason to be exhausted or, you know, frustrated at times. And, you know, it's a lot of problem solving as we're putting the show together. So just to kind of keep meeting the fact, like, after a show, as you know, like, it'll be parents and then their young kids, or just like college buddies, or people bringing their grandparents. And so just being reminded, like, oh yeah, don't forget, like, you're making the show for everybody, mm-hmm. you know, all these people. And because that can be easy to forget. So that was, I think it was somehow really helpful, even though it was grueling.
Yeah, it was so cool to see. It happened every single time where, okay, finish the show, you go do a meet and greet, and then I pack up the show, like, spend an hour packing up the show, or just, you know, putting the props away and whatnot. And putting the suitcases. And then there's still a mile-long line of people. And that, I think that says so much, where people are willing to wait in line for an hour and a half or 2 hours just to say hi and say, you know, we really appreciate what you're doing. I don't think that doesn't seem common for a lot of acts. And I think that's kind of the nice appeal of humans and the nice appeal of, you know, what you're doing up on stage and connecting with the people.
Yeah. I mean, I think that when they're excited and willing to wait that long, because the meet and greet would go longer than the show sometime. Yeah,
every time.
And I just love, that's the show, of course, is a blast, and that's why you're there. But just meeting the people afterwards, like that, those kind of interactions resonate and kind of recharge the batteries to keep going. And, and I think that's what I miss. I think that's why at first it was kind of like in quarantine, the first month or the first 2 months, it's kind of like, well, you know what? This was a good recharge of the batteries. Like, it's kind of good to not, you know, burn yourself out with a live performance. But now it's like, man, I really miss, I think, being reminded why we're doing all of this in the first place, you know, because it's hard. I mean, the virtual shows are fun, and you really can blow people's minds and make a connection that way. But there's still this, you know, the two-dimensional, you know, barrier between the two of you, you and your audience is it's just not the same. So,
yeah, I don't
miss. And it's never going to be, it's not going to be the same even when we start doing live shows again. Because those meet and greets, I don't know if those meet and greets can like happen in their
I was just going to say that. That's going to be a very different situation. And the show itself, I know a lot of what we do is interactive and bringing people up. So now it's like, okay, when is it going to be okay to do that? And when is it going to be, when are audiences not going to go, uh-oh, somebody's walking up on stage now? Like,
I think you and I both, watching even season three back, it's like, man, I do a lot of magic in my mouth.
Me too.
There's a lot of stuff in my mouth, but I think you also, you know, it's people love when stuff comes out of our mouths.
I can't. I thought about this the other day. I'm like, I don't think I can do the balloon trick. If I ain't, like, the whole gag of it is me giving it to them in a Ziploc bag, and I'm like, well, definitely can't do that anymore. And then you're the new bit in season three was close up magic, and now it's just kind of hysterical to watch that and be like, well,
yeah, that was a happy accident. who knew just a silly pun would become a life threatening gag.
Mm-hmm. What was we had a bunch of just insane things, and like the team was just working around the clock to make stuff happen for that show, and they were all great. But like, what was something that kind of stuck out in your mind during season three where you're like, oh, this was insane? For me, like I remember the IKEA shoot day where it was like, I wasn't even there, but I'm hearing from everybody. It's 110 degrees outside, and the prop is literally melting.
That was a tough day because the prop that we rented was from Greg Wilson's collection, because it's very hard to find a sawing in half that will hold not even a large man. I'm 5'9", just to hold an adult man. Most of those things are made for, you know, 5'2", wafy humans. And so we got this prop that had a storied history, because like apparently Johnny Carson had been in this prop, you know, like Mark Wilson had used it over the years. And we did this whole application to it to make it look IKEA wood grain. And then it was 110 degrees. We were out in, I don't know, where were we? Far east of Pasadena, east of Altadena.
My favorite thing is that there's literally a IKEA like 5 minutes from the studio, but they chose the furthest IKEA possible. It was amazing.
Yeah, I don't think that the Burbank IKEA wasn't game for our hijinks.
I remember that,
because we did shoot inside the IKEA for like an hour or two. None of that made the cut, or it was just me kind of running around doing stuff inside the IKEA. Yeah, that was a very hot day, and then I'm inside a very hot box.
Mm-hmm.
You're asking people. Yeah.
I remember Stu coming back saying, oh, yeah, and they're not letting us use the IKEA logo. You can do everything in the parking lot, but we can't use the IKEA. And then I saw in the final cut you were able to. I was like, oh,
we
my
did,
God,
yeah.
I felt so bad for them.
But I think what looks to me, I think what bit really surprised me. I mean, the pinata bit, you know, that was a lot of trial and error R&D on different methods. And then, you know, we were the whole art department was up very late making multiple pinatas since we have to smash one every time.
They are wizards. I left at like 8 o'clock one day and came back at 9 o'clock the next day, and they're all still there making pinatas. Mm-hmm. I felt so bad. I'm like, I'm sorry I left.
And then the, you know, the influencing the influencer bit, I think we just kind of, we knew we wanted to do this thing. And then we, you know, we start shooting season 3 and we just hadn't really had a time to sit down and be like, okay, let's figure out all the layers. What's the method? How are we going to do this? And we just kept putting it off. So I think it was like our last shoot day. And I think, you know, the couple nights before that, we were up very late, like just, you know, trying to put together this many headed beast. What else was really weird? Well, nudists, of course, was interesting.
Yeah, because the tricks for that preparing were changing for that constantly, because I was building something that, okay, we needed this, and then it changed, and then I think Blake and Kyle were working on something, and then I saw the cut, and I'm like, oh, those are all completely different. So I think, I imagine when you got there, the situation might have changed a little bit in terms of what you
could do. Yeah, I think like the butt sweat and the tan line thing were like just audibles on the fly, like last minute kind of things that were propless. Because anything else looked like it was props that I brought in. And I think the best stuff was stuff that really, truly was like impromptu. There was one other bit that just occurred to me that was like the car wash levitation thing. Mm-hmm. You know, were you there on that day?
No, but that came out really good.
Like we totally couldn't do it in the spot that we wanted to. And we just didn't know how we were going to set up the whole gimmick and everything. So that was like an on the fly audible that turned out good. It's interesting how, like, I think season 2 and season 3, you know, we shot them back to back. Season 2, we had a little more time to like think and overthink and rethink before we even got to shooting. And season 3, like, there was just no time. We were just fine. So you just kind of had to go with whatever is your first gut instinct about what this bit is about, what the method is, let's do it. And I think that worked. Like, I think there was some benefit in not overthinking. I tend to overthink and second guess. And I think season 3, we just didn't have time to do that. And it was a reminder that you can trust your initial gut instinct sometimes.
Yeah. And it's going to prove that creativity comes from like a time crunch. You know, I remember Jon Stewart always talking about that. The show isn't done at 4 o'clock. The show just tapes at 4 o'clock. And, you know, we do
right.
What we can. And that happened, I think, a lot in season 3 of like, yes, what are we doing tomorrow? I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Let's figure it out.
We're working on today right now. But that the schedule, like, I wish people could see that schedule. Anybody who's worked in television for years probably would see that and go, what? That's insane. Just the little amount of time that was given, and makes the season even more impressive that everybody pulled it off.
Yeah, it was a lot of, everyone, it was an amazing, you know, Avengers of magic, where it was just, but we were really kind of like a fine tuned machine, and we just kind of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, friction within a creative team like that, where, you know, I'm sure in any type of TV production, but with magic, it's hard because, you know, you have to delegate certain tricks to certain people, and everyone kind of has their opinion about how a trick is coming along, and you kind of have to, you know, and sometimes people have good thoughts on it, and sometimes you're like, you know, I get what you're saying, but I don't think that is important in this context. And so it's a lot of kind of gut decisions on the fly. And and also, like with magic, it's a lot of fishing, in that you have maybe 2 or 3. The scheduling allows you to try a trick maybe 2 or 3 times. So if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you know, because you need to have that perfect take of the trick without cutting. And then you need that person to react in a way that is mathematically commensurate with how amazing a trick was. Otherwise, like a viewer, you know, like if you watch something and you're like, that's incredible, but that person, why aren't they freaking out?
Yeah.
The equation doesn't add up to me as a viewer, and you kind of aren't as satisfied.
Yeah, that's a tricky thing. I mean, anytime I've been on set with you guys, like the reactions were, it seemed it was like not 50-50, but it was either like, holy crap, or, oh, that's neat. You know, and just everybody in Video Village is like, well, that looked great, but we can't use it. So
yeah, it's really hard. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we're shooting in LA, and even if they're, you know, and they're all random people off the street, but random people off the street have IMDb, like they want, they're involved in show business somehow. So they never, it's really hard to get someone to forget that there's a camera. So they're kind of always a little bit thinking about how they're coming across, which is why the stuff with kids is great, because kids will very quickly forget about the camera and just behave really real and say whatever they truly will say that they wouldn't say if they were aware there's a camera. So that's nice.
Learned, I think it was like a year or two ago, I was working with Stu, who's head magic dude for humans, Stuart McLeod, and we're working on another just like kind of mini sizzle reel for something else. And same thing, people off the street, but a few of them were actors. And it was amazing how the actors basically just ruined the takes because they were trying so hard and they were trying to look amazed. And it was a good lesson right there to go, when people say, oh, they're all actors, they're all stooges, I'm like, no, they're not, because it would be blatantly obvious if they were. You can't fake surprise, I don't think. You have to be an amazingly talented actor to fake genuine surprise and excitement, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So that's why it'd be nice to shoot this show like in the real world, you know, like just at least 50 mile radius outside of LA or in the Midwest or something, where I think just people are real. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think among Blaine, you know, kind of revolutionizing street magic in the late 90s, he was going up to people and getting those reactions of, because he was like in New York and Boston and stuff. So people mm-hmm. who definitely weren't actors, who definitely weren't used to being around camera. And there's a difference there. And the reactions are almost funnier at times because they're just bewildered. And but everybody on Humans that, you know, was brought in off the street or, you know, found in the day, I felt that they did. The reactions were great and, you know, genuine, which is very hard to do in LA. So
the team. Yeah, I think it helps that, you know, I wasn't sure going into like season two, like, is it good if someone has seen the show? Is it better if they don't know what they're on? And I found that because people are kind of a little weary of like, what is this? You know, if they don't know what the show is, there's a little bit of their guard is up, making sure they're not getting punked or something, like, making sure that the show is not there to make them look dumb. So I think people who had seen the show know that, oh, this, I'm going to see something awesome. And it's about celebrating positivity, and that they kind of can let themselves go.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. What do you think is next? what comes after that? I mean, you're looking, I assume you're doing a tour in the next coming year, you know, when we're allowed to do shows again. What are you thinking?
You know, that's the question of the month, Nick. What is next? I mean,
I go in and out. It's like a day by day basis of anxiety and depression. One day I'm like, hey, this is fine, we can do virtual magic. The next day I'm like, why, God, what's the point?
Yeah, I can't wait to get back on the road, or at least to do live shows again. But since that won't happen for a while, I'm, you know, like there's an animated show idea that I've always had for a while. So I'm kind of working on that and working on kind of some hopefully funny scripted magic related series ideas, you know, like as opposed to jumping right back into another season of Magic for Humans, I think we might transition into like a couple time a year specials mm-hmm. with Netflix, you know, just to kind of change it up a little bit. But other than that, I don't, it's interesting. I don't know what is, you know, it's a lot of casting lines and casting nets and see what you catch.
I feel like most of careers in magic, or most of careers in entertainment, are just kind of, sometimes, you know, many months in advance, but a lot of times it's months at a time that you're kind of going by in the calendar. Oh, okay, this booked, this is happening. And now it's been a weird adjustment to look at the calendar and go, there's nothing there, and there will probably continue to be nothing there because we're not allowed to do anything.
Yeah, like a lot of, you know, like I still have dates on the books between now and the end of the year, tour dates and stuff, but I know that those will probably get rescheduled. So it's kind of, it's normally you can look at 6 months and know what your life's going to be like, but now it really does feel like it's 1 month at a time. And, you know, it feels like right now everyone was so eager to open back up. And I think we're going to kind of, it's, couple steps forward, even more steps back.
Yeah.
I don't know. We need therapy. That's what this is right now. This chat feels a little therapeutic.
That's why I do this podcast, so I can do therapy with magicians and not have to pay people. It's a little bit cheaper.
It is cheaper.
It's nice. If you hear barking, it's because my dog is on the couch right now, sleep barking.
I wish I could sleep as deep and as quickly as my dog.
Do your dogs like dream, like fight ninjas in their sleep like my dogs do?
Yeah. It's like woo, 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 that kind of thing.
I always get concerned.
And Betty, you know, my bigger one, you know, the eyes don't fully shut. So they're kind of like open and you see the pupils. It does look like they're oddly possessed.
Yeah.
But it's cute.
It's adorable, you know. But I mean, I'm sure Jack has been keeping you sane. I'm sure the dogs, like, that's kind of been our thing too. It's like, well, you know, traveling a bunch, it has been nice to just sit down and focus on the things that actually matter, and just sitting on the couch or sitting in bed at night reading, going, okay, this is okay. Like, this is very zen, and just trying to remind myself that everything is fine.
Yeah, I mean, like the first month, I remember, like, you know, because Jack's up at 6 a.m. every day, and you know, he's ready, he's rare and ready to go. So Jill and I were kind of like, we just didn't have any time to do anything but focus on him. And I think we were kind of losing our mind a little bit just due to the loss of sleep, and also kind of, you know, there's this feeling of you know, are creatively and artistically wanting to stay fulfilled, and you can't kind of do those things. And then your friends who don't have kids are complaining of running out of shows to binge, and you just want to punch them in the face. And then I think now we're like, you know what? I think actually having an 18-month-old is, and having this forced structure is key to keeping us sane, giving us purpose, you know, like, cause I know I can't imagine waking up and having no one, a wide open day. What do you do every day? It's a Groundhog's Day. There's the schedule's open. I think that would be very intimidating. So it is really nice having this time with him. Keeping him alive is also keeping us alive.
Gives you something to do. Gives you a purpose.
It gives us something to do. Thank God.
Yeah. Anything else? Like, I always ask people, like, what kind of inspires them outside of magic? Anything that you're gravitating to? Like, right now I'm listening to the Scrubs podcast and reading Mike Birbiglia's book. Those are two things. And I'm taking a psychology course through Yale.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's been wonderful. Looking for something, like, so much of it correlates to magic. And I used to think Darren Brown was a genius, and he is. He is a genius. But now I'm realizing, oh, he just took an intro to psychology class. There's a lot of principles here, and not, you know, diminishing what he does, but there's so much you can take from it. So those are a few things I've been doing that have kind of keeping my attention and keeping me excited.
I've been like doing, you know, Zoom therapy once a week, which has been really good. And then I started playing golf again a little bit. And I, you know, I played golf since I was, you know, five, and then played throughout high school. And then now, kind of over the past 10 years, would play like every 3 or 4 years because I would get so frustrated. Cause I think I'm average. And I think I would get upset that I can't figure out how to get better than average. And now I think I find, just because we're so cooped up, the fact that you know, there's this par 3 course near my house. It opened up again, and I can like be socially distanced and just focused on this thing. And it takes 90 minutes, and it's like kind of my meditation, because I'm not good at actually meditating. So golf has been good.
Yeah. Do you, like, you talked about not getting past a level of mediocrity. Like, I felt like that was me with kind of everything I've done in my life besides magic. Like, there's a level you get to, and you're like, well, I'm a drummer, but I guess I'm gonna be a Ringo my whole life. I'm like, I'm not gonna be this amazing, you know, Led Zeppelin style drummer. Like, does that mess with you? Because that's something that sometimes messes with me.
I mean, maybe you'll agree, if we weren't above average at magic, then we also were not above average at anything else, we might feel really bad about ourselves. But luckily, we found this thing that we are at least better than the average bear at. And I think that's why I even gravitated to magic in the first place when I first discovered it. And then it's like, oh, wow, you're actually, well, you sucked at sports, but you're okay at this. And you're like, I'm okay at this. Let's do more of this. And I think that's the saving grace. But that I think I'm happily average at everything else, as long as magic is something that I feel like I have something more to contribute to.
It took till like my 30s to realize that it's okay not to be amazing at everything. And it's no, I wrote this like essay on my blog the other day that kind of like freaked out a whole bunch of people. It's just about quitting and letting things go and knowing when it's time to move on, and just kind of talking about how I'm incapable of quitting things. And a lot of magicians reached out to me like, hey man, don't quit. It's okay, man. it was really like really sweet that a lot of people were concerned for my career safety. But
sorry for not reaching out, Nick.
It's okay. It's fine.
I just liked it. You know what, Nick? I agree. I'm glad I didn't have to tell you.
Were you
talking specifically about quitting magic? Or are you just talking about that nothing needs to be permanent and that the end of one thing can be the beautiful beginning of another?
Well, I started it with saying, you know, I often think about quitting, and I was talking about magic, but not actually doing it, just because I think sometimes the anxiety is pretty high for me. It's more so now like travel anxiety, and I've talked about that a bunch on the podcast, but just knowing when it's time to be done with something, and then more so going back to what you were saying with the golf, knowing that it's okay to not be, because because we've done magic for so long, we feel the need, because we're good at this, we need to be good or amazing at everything. And that's where the stress comes from when doing other things. And now I'm like, oh, I can be a shitty drummer. It's fine. I'm just having fun. Or I can be a mediocre.
I don't need to get a standing ovation from drumming.
Exactly.
I can get a standing ovation from magic. But we do think that, it's like, it's like, okay, you're going to do, I'm sure this happens to you. It's like, okay, I'm going to volunteer my time for a cause. Well, I could volunteer to, scoop soup or help make stuff in a kitchen, but I feel like I should volunteer. I should do a show, cause it's like, I we feel the need to, that our time donated isn't fully, utilized unless we're doing the thing that we're best at. But I feel like I've often thought that there's kind of like, obviously an ego thing to that, but I think the whole point of volunteering is to be selfless, and it's hard to be selfless when we're in the spotlight, So there is something to like us finding a way to give back that is not tied to performance. What I mean?
Yeah. I mean, my wife and I were volunteering at the Burbick Animal Shelter for the past 2 years, and it was every time we would go in there, you're like, we're doing something right, this is important to do, but we just leave feeling depleted. And I think it's exactly what you just talked about, is that ego thing of, well, I'm used to people looking at me and clapping for me, and like nobody
right. Do they know how much an hour of my time normally costs?
I just picked up all this dog poop and nobody said thank you. But it's like, oh, that's not why you should be doing any of this. You should just be doing it to be a good person and help people. But I don't know.
And again, that's why we miss performing now. It's because, we've the novelty of doing things averagely without getting applause is worn off. We miss that applause.
I don't know if you saw Aziz.
Maybe you need to take your Zooms off mute so people can actually hear that applause.
I think I need to and just accept that they're going to miss a few things I say because somebody's going to be vacuuming in the background. I don't know if you saw Aziz Ansari's special from, I think, last year. I think Spike Lee directed it. And he ends with this amazing monologue about, because he had a whole Me Too thing, and he talks about it throughout the whole show. And he ends the show by saying, I'm butchering it, but, I'd always end the show with saying, thanks so much for coming. But now he's like, I got to experience what it's like if I never got to do this again. And now I actually am saying, thank you so much for coming. And it's way more eloquent than that, but I'm feeling like I'm going to have to start ending my show like that once we get back to live stuff, because this, I think for all of us, is a wonderful slap in the face to go, oh, the only thing permanent is impermanence. We're guaranteed nothing, especially live magic shows. So it's
I feel like, I agree that we'll have that sentiment of like immense gratitude, but I feel like audiences, I think, are realizing that they took live entertainment for granted, and they took the fact that we would hop on multiple flights and sleep in crappy hotels and or just not sleep very well at all to come perform for them, I feel like we're going to be drenched in gratitude as well. So it'll feel, I think, like a really a warm hug that we can't really give. Yeah, it'll feel like the as close to a hug as it's safe to get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope so, man. I think you're absolutely right. I've noticed that with being reluctant to do these Zoom shows, and then you see at the end or even during how just thrilled people are to have something that is interactive and isn't, you know, sorry Netflix, you know, they give us money, but you know, isn't a television show. You know, it's something that they it's kind of an imitation of live entertainment. And
And then it's just for them. And you can see, especially when a family is watching, and you can kind of see, you know, you've got these two kids glued, and then the parents are just kind of like, just thank God that you're taking that you're carrying the weight right now. Even if it's a half hour, you can see that they're just so happy that they can.
Yeah.
Relax.
I can't imagine. I hope it's gotten easier for you guys. And I guess, like you said, it's good that Jack's 18 months, but I can still imagine is quite a juggling act to, you know, have your sanity and be able to go golf and do all that.
It's a lot of give and take. I mean, obviously it's kind of, we try to keep it balanced. So it's like, okay, I did the 3 hours this morning. Let's trade that off. So maybe I can get 3 hours to get something done. And we're kind of, it's a constant negotiation a little bit. And it does make you realize, like for all of 2019, when we were busy shooting the show, you know, like how much of a burden for maintaining the parenting and keeping the house together that I kind of put on Jill, and that she was able to take that all on and thrive at her career as well. It kind of, you know, it's like, it's amazing what people do to help us support our own dreams, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And
totally.
I think that's what we're all realizing a little bit.
I mean, it was inspiring, you know, just seeing you guys and your work ethic and, you know, Jill juggling the kid and stuff as you're on the road. It's like anytime I had a day where I was like, man, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, then I look and see other people like you guys who really are kind of doing everything and are making it work. You need to keep that in the back of your mind, I think, at all times. Just know that it's possible to do everything and to keep everything up in the air. You just have to not, I think, overexert yourself and not overtire yourself.
There's a little moderation that you have to do.
Yeah, totally.
In order to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I won't keep you from Jack too long. Thank you so much for doing this and chatting with me.
I'm excited to see what trick you're going to do with that envelope back there.
I have a magazine here.
You have a prediction in there?
Yeah, that I got from the airport. You know, magic on...
What's an airport?
Exactly. That's one of the jokes. Mm-hmm. And then I have a cruise ship joke. This joke kills on cruise ships. When there were cruise ships... This is not good at all for, whoops, there goes my Rubik's Cube. This is Blake's thingy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, toilet paper? Yeah. This is my favorite thing Blake has ever created because he's a genius. And you open it up and then you got some toilet
paper. It's so good. So good.
Magic.
It's really good. Magic, man. Magic.
Man, well, thanks so much for doing this. Thanks for having me a part of Humans and the live show, and thanks for being a good human and a good person.
Well, thanks, Nick. I can't wait to go back on the road someday with you and or make more television with you when it's safe to congregate in a room.
I will gladly open for you and have the audio not work. We forgot to bring that up. When I went out to that casino show, we tested everything, and I'm like, the music's not playing, and I'm doing my silent character. This is going to be interesting.
Where was that? Pennsylvania? Wilkes-Barre?
That's amazing you can remember that. I can't ever – you're absolutely correct. That was Wilkes-Barre.
Okay.
But the audience was on board. They were a good crowd, but I'm like, this is literally the thing I have nightmares about.
The worst that could happen.
And it's happening right now.
I know, and we couldn't figure out what the problem was. It was so weird.
Yeah, the tech guys are like running in front. I'm like, well, I guess I'm going to do my little bottles trick now. And they were great. That was so much fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Well, can't wait for those awkward times to happen again.
Me too. Give my best to Jack and Jill and the puppies. It was good to see you, man.
Thank you. Bye, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs at twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.